listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Hello and welcome to another AHDB podcast. My name is David Udall. I'm Head of Arable Market Specialists in the Market Intelligence Division. Today we're going to be hearing about what is happening on global grain and oilseed markets and the impacts on domestic businesses. We're also going to be looking in a little bit more detail at input costs and how high prices and high costs can be managed through marketing strategies, as well as a little look forward to the changing future that we have of reducing direct payments and a move to new subsidy systems. You'll be hearing from the full team of Arable Market Specialists today, and we're going to start off by looking at global oilseed and grain markets.
We've had a moderate La Nina this season, which has affected South America significantly throughout November to about January. So this has actually brought quite a lot of dry weather. So this was in the moment when Brazil and Argentina would have been planting their soybean and maize crops. So because development was late of these crops, we are actually seeing the large soybean crop that Brazil are going to produce harvesting is behind schedule. It's further behind schedule as well because of the ongoing rain in Brazil at the moment. So it's providing this support to markets as this this crop comes to the export market late. And in Argentina as well, there's been ongoing dry weather, which is having significant impacts on their the yield of their soybean crop that they are going to be harvesting soon as well. But a key point to note with this soybean crop that Brazil are producing is the off-season safrina maize crop will replace this soybean crop, which is currently being delayed. So this is a significant amount of maize which will go into the global balance sheet and actually exported. So this is a key watch point over the next few weeks and months that Brazil managed to harvest their soybean crop and to ensure that the area that CONAB predicted for the safrina crop actually goes into the ground.
Yeah, so the soybean crop's being harvested now, so it won't be that long, I guess, before we get a feel for the final sort of a firmer feel for the numbers of the size of those crops. But for the maize, as you say, these crops aren't going to be harvested until June, July time. So that's going to be rumbling for a while yet. So we, in terms of potential support or pressure on the maize market, that's going to be running bit. One of the other key things that we've seen a lot this season in terms of support for prices has been the demand from China. What's the outlook there?
Yeah, so as everybody will know, that markets have been significantly supported. We've had this agriculture commodity boom off Chinese purchasing, and obviously their pig population was decimated by the African swine fever a few years back, and we are seeing China now purchase a significant amount of grains and oilseeds. We're way ahead of the five-year range and the five-year average. So this is to actually to feed their pig herd, which they are rebuilding. But this also, going into the next marketing year, we are expecting to see this demand continue, as there's large structural changes in Chinese pig farming. So it's changing more. It's changing from a traditional small-scale farming that uses food waste for livestock feed to more high-protein feeds. There's also expansion within Chinese the poultry sector as well, which will increase their growth for feed. So going into the next marketing year, we can expect if they're rebuilding a pig population, for this to continue to sustain this population as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, really, because I suppose that's what's feeding into the sort of early long range forecasts that we've seen from the likes of the IGC and the USDA, their sort of 5 and 10 year outlooks. They're still pointing to strong import demand from China at least into next year and potentially longer. So while it's a difficult one in some circumstances because it the visibility of those numbers and what's happening in the country isn't as great as other countries, it does seem like this is set to rumble for some time yet, potentially.
And I think another quite important factor at the moment as well, Helen, is the Russian intervention. So obviously at the end of last year, the Russians announced that they were planning on implementing a wheat export tax from the 15th of February. The idea behind this tax was to keep wheat in the country and therefore prevent rising domestic food prices during this pandemic. They then announced that from the 1st of March to the end of the season, this tax would actually double to 50 euro per ton. And then going into new crops, so from the 2nd of June, it was changing to a formula-based tax, which would be calculated at 70% of the difference between the base price of wheat per ton and $200. So when the price of wheat goes up, so does the tax. And this is to try to prevent any incentive for Russian farmers to carry old crop wheat over into new crop. And this had a couple of impacts. So firstly, there was a big push to get wheat exports out the country before this tax came into play. So I think it's estimated that about 3.3 million tons was exported in January. If this is right, this is like 57% higher than last year, last January. And it's also likely to impact spring plantings. So spring wheat accounts for about a quarter of total wheat area. And Sovacon have said that this could reduce their production forecast by up to 2 million tons. So we've got a picture where we're seeing the Russians not only producing less wheat, but also it's going to be a lot more tied up within their country and therefore less easily accessible on the global market in the new season.
Elsewhere in the EU, we are actually seeing in EU 27 production, we're seeing a rebound for wheat. So obviously, notably, the resurgence has come from France, who obviously suffered the, or a lot of Western Europe suffered the wet autumn we did in 2019, which led to a large reduction in area, thus production. So we've seen a resurgence in that, and ending stocks for next year are likely to increase. Weather in the moment for these crops in Eastern Europe is faring quite well. There was a cold spell, as we know, as we had in the UK, a significant amount of snow, but that the damage to these crops has been limited, and there's just been pockets of winter damage. In the US, we actually saw the area for wheat is increased by 5% on the previous year, but obviously last year was significantly low. And this has been a reaction to the high prices, which we've seen, as you know, as we've mentioned, what's been driving this market at the moment. Again, there was a cold snap over North America a few weeks back. We haven't got significant data on what the impacts of this could be, but going into April, we will receive the crop condition reports from the USDA, which will provide an insight into what damages possibly could have entailed, if it did entail any at all. The pricing ratio in the US between maize and soybeans will set the tone for growers' intentions, which will be happening in the next month. So the pricing relation between the North 21 soybean contract and the December 21 maize contract. So at the minute, it's actually favoring soybeans. You know, it was at 2.4 times the price of maize, so the price ratio is. And in the USDA, as you mentioned, Helen, the outlook for a month back or a few weeks back, we actually saw the soybean area significantly increase. I believe it's the second largest area that's been intended to be sown. And we've also seen an increase in the maize area too. But we, despite all of this, the USDA, this large area increase, which will inherently, if planted and goes well, will lead to a large production, stocks for next season are not forecast to increase significantly because of this, because we are still expecting to see a large demand within this global market for the next marketing year as well. But as we receive further information from the USDA, at the end of this month, there will be another survey that goes out on the intentions, and this will just confirm that the soybean area is going to be significant for this marketing year, for the next marketing year as well.
Yeah, potentially. We'll have to wait and see what the USDA forecasts, but I think that's definitely the expectation, isn't it, that they will back up their earlier forecast. For me, out of all of that, the key thing is this expectation that US stocks are only going to increase a little bit despite these very big and potentially then very big crop, big areas and big crops potentially in 21-22 season. And when we look at that against a backdrop of tight stocks amongst major exporters that have been run down this season, if we saw a similar pattern across the world, which, while we've still got a lot of weather to happen, at this point in the year, you can only kind of go, well, assume average effectively. It seems that that sort of pattern could be replicated. And so we could be looking at another tight season next year around the major exporters and potentially around the world.
Yeah, and Helen, I think that's an interesting point, and it's probably a similar picture to see that we're probably going to see in the UK as well. We obviously had a very small harvest this year. Production was below 10 million tonnes. It was the smallest harvest in 40 years. And because of this, when it came to forecasting our November balance sheet, where we'd usually have a surplus available for export or free stock, for the first time ever, we had a deficit, indicating tightness. Since then, a lot's changed. The market really has done its job properly. The price of feed, the premium feed wheat over feed barley, has just increased up to almost £55 a tonne at one stage. And this has really shifted a lot of animal feed demand away from wheat and into barley. We've heard compounders saying they're using barley at levels that has never been seen before. And maize has also actually picked up some of this demand as well. And then this lockdown three, it's killed quite a lot of demand for milling wheat as well. So the demand situation from the previous forecast has changed. And then, so when it came to looking at our February estimate, we did actually manage to identify a small surplus. This said, by the time we'd taken off what we'd exported to the end of December, we were back with a little deficit again. So it's looking like it's going to be very minimal carryover stocks that we take with us into the crop. And looking at the BPS, the early bird area figure, we might have a harvest production of 14.5 million tonnes. So supplies not looking huge. And we've actually also seen similar with our UK futures relationship to Paris futures. Normally, we're at fairly good discounts to Paris, one of these reasons being that we are pricing off the feed wheat specification, whereas Paris is basis and milling wheat specification. However, we've seen our November contract moving up ever closer to their December contract. I think at the moment we're maybe at a £2 or £3 discount. So this shows that our market is trying to price itself to limit new crop exports and try and keep as much wheat in the country. And what I'd say probably one of the biggest factors to this sudden tighter feeling of supply that we're now feeling for new crop is the government announcement of E10, so increased biofuels in petrol. They announced it a couple of weeks ago. So we've got two biofuel plants in the UK. We've got Ensis, which has been running pretty much on wheat, maize, this season. That's due to its price and availability in the north of England this season. But we're pretty sure that once new crop comes online, we will see it swap back to wheat again. And then we've obviously got the Vivergo, which has been offline for a couple of years now. And after this E10 announcement, they said they were going to fire back up again and hoping to have production starting by early 2022, so in time for the second half of new crop. So the picture has changed slightly. I'd say we're looking at minimal carryover, probably quite average production, although there is a little way to go for that. And then now suddenly a large chunk of demand in the north of England that we probably hadn't anticipated.
So we've just heard how volatile global grain and oilseed markets are. And at the moment, they are well supported and likely to stay supported for the short term. The UK situation is likely to stay tight for this marketing year and going into harvest 21 and beyond. And the impact of E10 coming into the market could continue that tightness and see strong domestic demand well into 2022. But the question with a marketing strategy isn't just how good the price is, it's about understanding your cost as well. So let's now hear a little bit more about input costs, looking at fuel, fertilizer, interest rates, and everything else to do with your marketing of your grain.
As we know, red diesel prices, they track movements in crude oil markets. At the moment, crude oil markets are quite bullish. This is kind of supported by production cuts made by the OPEC Plus group. For those of you who don't know, OPEC Plus are basically just a club of the nations that all kind of produce crude oil and export it. They hold monthly meetings, with the next one scheduled for April. And this April meeting could start to see the production cuts that are in place start to gradually kind of be reintroduced, basically. It all kind of centres on global infection rates, because that is basically a reflection of demand. The spring drilling campaign at the moment for the UK will likely kind of experience red diesel prices that are high, kind of picking up really with a month to go because of this next OPEC meeting in April. Longer term, the outlook will entirely depend on the global recovery from the pandemic. Sorry. Over to you, James, for fertilizer.
So fertilizer prices, be no surprise to anyone, have come from a relatively low base sort of October time last year, and then in the last three to six months have really accelerated away. There's a couple of reasons for that. The often touted one is the increase in energy prices, and in particular natural gas prices. And we have seen that to an extent. We've certainly seen those natural gas prices rise, but we've done some work recently looking at the relationship as well between crop prices and the price of fertilizer, and the relationship there is certainly much stronger. So that can start to give us a bit of an indication of where we might see fertilizer prices go. We've already heard from Helen, Tomer and Ant that we're likely to see some tighter markets next year, and particularly if this Chinese demand continues, then corn price is very, very likely to stay strong. If we take that price a proxy for the area, or certainly the demand overall for fertilizer, then we can see why fertilizer prices could also be relatively strong next year. We're coming into a period of strong demand now. We're going to have some big plantings in the US, as we've mentioned already, and combine that with the cost of energy and increases elsewhere, and also the potential for reduced interest rates, and we could well see reduced exchange rates rather, we could well see some challenges ahead, and some increased costs for fertilizer. Looking at interest rates, we know that commercial banks have been told to prepare for negative interest rates. While if you're looking to invest, that could well be a positive thing, because it'll reduce the cost of borrowing. It also reduces the value of cash in the bank. While we're not going to see a huge swing in interest rates, it's not like we're going to go from the 0.1% that we're at the moment down to a minus 10%. It's certainly enough to make a noticeable impact. It does increase the incentive to store grain through the season somewhat. The opportunity cost of having cash in the bank is obviously going to reduce. And we've already heard that with bioethanol demand potentially up next year, and Vivergo coming back online from the beginning of 2022, there could well be a strong incentive to carry grain into the second half of the season. And negative interest rates will obviously help to incentivize that carry into the latter half of the year. On the other side of that, a negative interest rate will also drive a reduced exchange rate, all other things being equal. It'll obviously depend on the relative interest rates in other countries. But a lower interest rate in the UK certainly reduces the incentive for foreign investment in UK priced derivatives, because there's less savings to be, or less money to be gained from holding savings. So that's something certainly to watch out for. Obviously, if we see a reduced exchange rate, then we will also see a little bit more price support for UK grains and oilseeds.
I think the key thing is for me, James, key thing is for me, Alex, what do we need to be considering when we're marketing our grain?
The biggest one is kind of that risk management side of it. It's different for each farm business, and entirely kind of depends on your risk appetite of you, the seller. There's no absolute right or wrong in grain marketing. Every farm business is different, both in location, marketing feelings towards marketing strategy as well. A farm in south of England will have different end markets, with potentially different quality parameters as well to a farm business in on the Scottish borders, really. So having that kind of sound marketing plan is key with the upcoming challenges that UK agriculture is facing in the next 5 years, as we spoke about, and just kind of making sure to know the different options in the homes that your crop has access to, especially if potentially desired quality levels are not achieved. I mean, selling rejected milling quality grain as feed to your neighbour down the road is fine, but could that go into another market for potentially a better margin maybe? Another choice of risk management is the idea of options contracts as well. And these kind of enable the owner to hedge against potential market movements with the use of call and put options. However, you need to make sure that you have this prior knowledge and the research rather than just kind of diving headfirst into it. I know, James, you've kind of looked at these in detail. If you want to kind of explain these a little bit better.
Yeah, so like you say, the key thing really is going to be understanding your risk appetite, and depending on what percentage you've already sold forward, it could well be that the options could be the thing to look at. And like you said, it depends very much on your view of the market. If you think the market's likely to be rising, then a call option is very much something you could look at, and put options if you think there may be a fall in the market. On the flip side of that, you have to say that the new crop prices, particularly as we look forward to the May 22 contract, are very attractive at the moment. And even using a put option, you can almost use that to guarantee yourself a minimum price for a small expenditure, and then look to the market to make gains above it. So it's slightly alternative to the way that it would normally be viewed, but it's certainly an option that there is. In terms of what else is going to be really important as we look towards next season, I really think cost management is going to be absolutely huge, and understanding your cost of production. You know, unless you understand how much it's costing you to grow something, then you're never going to know if you're achieving a good price or not. At the moment, with wheat prices at £200 per ton, arguably your cost management is obviously always important, but it's less important because it's very difficult to get that marketing decision wrong at £200 a ton. It's when we start to go into that high price, high cost year that understanding cost of production and managing your cost of production is going to be hugely important.
So we've heard about the high prices at the moment, and we've heard about costs and marketing strategies. But let's now take a look to the future and have a little look and a discussion around the changing structure of BPS in the coming years and a move to ELMS and how that could affect your farming business.
We're losing basic payment scheme, we're losing that support, but we know it's being replaced, and it's being replaced with ELMS. This has been well documented. So ELMS, what do we know about it at the moment? Well, it's currently trialing. It's trialing from this year through to 2024, the Sustainable Farming Initiative element of it, looking to launch in late 2024, depending on the outcome of these trials. It's also going to form, it's got three arms that it forms at the moment. So the Sustainable Farming Initiative, which I've just mentioned, also the Local Nature Recovery and the Landscape Recovery elements of the scheme as well. And the elements of those will be being trialled later on this decade, so 24, 25 onwards, for implementation once the basic payment scheme has been removed in 2028.
The new ELM schemes, as Vicky said, are starting up and are designed to say there's no set end dates at the moment. It's split into three outcomes. So we've got the Sustainable Farming Incentive, the Local Nature Recovery and the Landscape Recovery. So the first to pilot is a Sustainable Farming Incentive. And what's really great about this is it's flexible. So you can choose from the 8 standards, build your own agreements, for example, around integrated pest management or water management. And it's really flexible, so it can help you to suit you and your farm. The Landscape Recovery and the Local Nature Schemes are more about blending public and private funding together for a more collaborative approach in our communities. And there's some really great opportunities here too, and those pilots are to start from 2022 around. But unlike direct payments, these schemes are designed to be paid on outcomes and results and the public goods that we hear so much about. And there will be work in achieving these. The testing trials are ongoing at the moment. They're working on how participants might be paid. So there's talk about a points-based system or a results-based system. And this would really mean monitoring your own results. So really thinking back to basics, the biggest thing to consider is are these new schemes right for you? Think about your business. Where do you see yourself in 5-10 years? And what personally would you like to achieve? There is some really great opportunities with these new schemes, and there is the flexibility to make them suit you, but understanding where your focus is going to be is definitely the first step to getting there.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you all so much for your time and taking part. Thank you for all your hard work and putting all this information together to go through such a comprehensive view of what's happening on a world market and domestically, and looking at it from a business planning point of view as well. So we've heard how stocks around the world and in the UK are going to become tight this season, and it's been driven globally by this big Chinese demand that we expect to continue for the rest of this season and likely for the rest of this year as well. And unless we see some really huge crops from Harvest 21, then prices do look supported for the long term. And we're already seeing that uncertainty from the things that Anthony was mentioning earlier regarding winter kill in the US and Russia. It's already putting a question mark over that supply response. And then, as we've heard in the second half of the session, high prices aren't a guarantee for profit. And we have high costs with fertilizer prices steadily rising and likely to stay firm if agricultural commodities stay firm in the coming months as well. And then, as Vicky and Megan mentioned, the changing picture of direct payments and subsidies and the question of how to build a grain marketing plan to cover both high prices, high costs, and also factor in the changes to subsidy as well. And I think that's our key message from today, and a key message that we've been promoting from a lot of things, is to look at how you can protect those new crop and new crop profit margins, understanding your cost of production by using tools such as AHDB's FarmBench tool, and then using the market information that the team produce to understand the longer term direction in prices. And as direct subsidies reduce and new support mechanisms come into play, that volatility of world markets will have an increasing impact on our business's bottom line. So our counsel is to look to the future and think 12 months ahead for how your crops are growing now and how that will be your cash flow. So again, I just want to say thank you all for taking part. Thank you for all our speakers for giving your time and your knowledge today. It's been really useful and really interesting. So I'll bring it to a close there. Thank you all much for your time and participation, and hopefully we'll speak to you all again very soon.